As I mentioned this morning, our lesson is going to focus on the word woman, especially at how it is translated in the Old Testament. There is a lot for us to learn, and there's a lot of digging for us to do as well. You know, when we look at a number of societies and cultures and world religions, we see that a lot of them treat women or regard them in a very low way. In other words, they are, in some societies, nothing more than property. Some, they have basically no rights at all. And, of course, we see that when we look at a couple of world religions where women are not regarded at all. And how sad that is, because that's just the opposite of how Jehovah views women. And all three of these words that we're going to look at tonight, that's translated woman, brings to us this idea of how high a regard God holds women. And tonight, you know, when we look at the Old Testament in particular, we'll look at so many, you know, there's so many societies and cultures that were around Israel that regarded women in such a bad, low way. But God never did. And I think we'll be maybe even surprised at some of the ways that we're going to look at that tonight. The first one we want to look at is found in the second chapter of the Bible, Genesis chapter 2. And we're going to look at the word woman and the word Eve. In Genesis chapter 2, we see this first use of that word. Genesis chapter 2, and let's look at verse 23. Genesis chapter 2, verse 23. And we'll see this first use of woman and comment a great deal about this particular Hebrew word. In Genesis chapter 2, verse 23, and Adam said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man." There's that first usage of that particular word. She was taken out of man, a part of man. In other words, they share something. There's a sharing. There's a oneness. There's this sense of being a part of the same. Now that, from the very beginning, puts God's view of women in contrast to most cultures and societies at that time, or later anyway, because they held women in such low regard. Here God says woman was created part of man. There was a sharing. And often we talk about how, I know I've done this in wedding ceremonies before, how she was taken out of the side of man, not on top of man or below man, but by his side. And this certainly is the idea of woman being taken out of man. There's that sense of oneness. There's a sense of sharing, of being a part of the same. And again, so many cultures held women in such low regard. But God holds them in the highest regard. And we'll see during the times of the law of Moses that women had so many rights that women did not have anywhere else. Only in the law of Moses. And I think we'll find that being quite unusual. And so we want to look at a number of those places tonight. First of all, the law of Moses protected women. It didn't just protect men, it protected women. And I wish we had all the time to look at all these, and we obviously don't, but let's just look at one. Exodus chapter 21. And we'll see how the law of Moses protected women. Exodus 21, and we'll begin reading in verse 28. And notice how women are mentioned right along with men. And this would not be true of many ancient societies. Verse 28 of Exodus 21. "If an ox gores a man or a woman to death, then the ox shall surely be stoned, and its flesh shall not be eaten. But the owner of the ox shall be acquitted. But if the ox tended to thrust with its horns in times past,
and has been made known to his owner, and he's not kept to confine, so that has killed a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and its owner also shall be put to death. If there is imposed on him a sum of money, then he shall pay to redeem his life, whatever is imposed on him. Whether it is gored a son or gored a daughter, according to this judgment it shall be done to him. If the ox gores a male or female servant, he shall give to their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. Notice, man or woman, son or daughter, male or female servant. See, the law of Moses protected women just like it protected men. And that was so not true of other cultures and societies. So from the very beginning, God has held women in a much higher regard than in other societies and in other cultures or in other religions. Women had inheritance rights. And I don't have time to read all of this, but in Numbers 36, we see one example of this. Women had inheritance rights. Numbers 36. And we'll just talk about the background to it very briefly. Beginning in verse 1, now the chief fathers of the families of the children of Gilead, the son of Machir, the son of Manasseh, of the families of the sons of Joseph, came near and spoke before Moses and before the leaders, the chief fathers of the children of Israel. And they said, the Lord commanded my lord Moses to give the land as an inheritance by lot to the children of Israel. And my lord was commanded by the Lord to give the inheritance of our brother Zelophehad to his daughters. Now if they are married to any of the sons of the other tribes of the children of Israel, then their inheritance will be taken from the inheritance of our fathers, and it will be added to the inheritance of the tribe into which they marry, so it will be taken from the lot of our inheritance. And the rest of that chapter talks about how that was to be applied. So women could inherit rights and property, and we'll look at another example at that. Now think about how recent women were given that right. In modern times, it's been very, very recent that women could do that. I read a lot about the Victorian period. It's one of my favorite periods in history. And if you go back and look at the Victorian age from like 1830 to 1905, women, even in a so-called advanced civilization like Great Britain, women during that time didn't have inheritance rights. Not like they did all the way back at that time in the law of Moses. So think about how ahead the law of Moses was. See, God held women in very high regard, which was not true until very modern times. I find that amazing. You know, so many people talk about how archaic and outdated the Bible is. It's just the opposite. It was very modern. Especially when it dealt with women. It was very modern. They could hold property. In Numbers chapter 27, just back a few pages. Numbers chapter 27, the first part of it talks about these inheritance laws. Notice verses 8 through 11. This is talking about these daughters of Zelophehad again. In verse 8 it says, and you shall speak to the children of Israel, saying, if a man dies and has no son, then you shall cause inheritance to pass to his daughter. If he has no daughter, then you shall give his inheritance to his brothers. If he has no brothers, then you shall give his inheritance to his father's brothers. And if his father has no brothers, then you shall give his inheritance to the relative closest to him in his family, and he shall possess it. And it shall be to the children of Israel a statute of judgment, just as the Lord commanded Moses. So again, we're going back, you know, this is 3,000, 4,000 years ago at least. And it's only been, again, not that long ago, that women could inherit property and other things. So the law of Moses was thousands of years ahead of other religions and societies and cultures and nations. So God from the very beginning
has always held women in high regard. And you don't certainly have to watch the world news very many times before you see how women are treated around the world. How awful they're treated. How they have no inheritance rights, no property rights, no voting rights, no rights of any kind, hardly. They're just treated like property themselves. But yet, God has never viewed women like so many religions and societies do in the world. The law of Moses, and of course carried on into the Christian age, holds women in higher regard than practically any other religion that's ever been on the face of the earth. And I think that's extremely significant. There's other ways, of course. Some of these might surprise you. In Numbers chapter 6, if you're still in Numbers, go back now to chapter 6. We'll read the first two verses. This is about the Nazarites, their vows, the laws. Numbers chapter 6, verse 1. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when either a man or woman consecrates an offering to take the vow of a Nazarite to separate himself to the Lord." And it talks about all the things they can and cannot do. A woman could be a Nazarite. A woman had just as much right to take the Nazarite vow and be a Nazarite as a man did. And it talks more about that later on in that chapter. But she could take that Nazarite vow. She had every right to. Of course, that would be unheard of in so many other, you know, religions and societies and cultures. She participated to some degree in some of the Jewish feasts. You remember that in some of the feasts when they offered up an animal, then they were allowed to participate in eating that animal. Well, it wasn't just the men that could eat the animal. The women could as well. The women were allowed to participate in that also. And a very surprising one is Exodus chapter 38. Exodus chapter 38. Exodus 38:8. This is talking about the bronze laver that was in the tabernacle area out in front. Verse 8 of Exodus 38:8 says, "He made the laver of bronze and its base of bronze from the bronze mirrors of the serving women who assembled at the door of the tabernacle of meeting." I read the English Standard Version this afternoon. It said ministering women. And we might want to know what all they did as far as the bronze laver was concerned, but it's the only place in the Bible that talks about it. So there's the sum total of our information about what happened there. It was in that one verse. But they did something with the bronze laver. They maybe collected the, you know, they took mirrors, if I remember right, to make that, and maybe that was part of what they did. I don't know. It doesn't say. Now, we certainly know that there were a number of things that they couldn't do. They didn't serve, of course, as high priests and those type of things, and they weren't allowed to do a number of those type of things. But I think sometimes we forget just how high a regard God had for women. And it was vastly different than all the nations around Israel. And of course, we'll mention a little bit about the New Testament as well. How God holds women in such high regard. And that's why I hate to hear people, you know, condemn the law of Moses or condemn the New Testament for its view of women. That's just the opposite is true. The Bible holds women in the highest regard of anywhere in the world. Women are held in extremely high regard by God. Now that same word is used in a slightly different sense, talking about woman and Eve in Genesis 3. And one other thing I want to stress before we go to a different word, notice what it says about woman and Eve in Genesis chapter 3, verse 20. Genesis chapter 3, verse 20.
Verse 20 of Genesis 3 says, "And Adam called his wife's name Eve because she was the mother of all living." There's an entirely different aspect. She was the mother of all living. The word basically means life giver. And she is. She's the life giver. She gives life. No wonder Adam called his wife Eve, because she is the mother of all living. She's part of man, and man is part of her. Ever thought about it in that sense? She's part of man, man is part of her. You can't separate those. Again, that goes back to why homosexuality is so against God's order, because that couldn't be said about homosexual relationships. So Eve, woman, is the mother of all living. And so God holds women in great regard, and of course still does. Now, a very different word that's translated woman in the Old Testament is found in Genesis chapter 2, this time verse 18. Describing woman. Verse 18 of Genesis 2, "And the Lord God said, It is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper comparable to him." That is a fantastic verse. And if societies and cultures throughout the world would all follow that, certainly so much of the atrocities that go on in our world would not go on. Why does it say, what does it say there? The King James says, help meet. The New King James says, helper comparable to him. One who helps or assists. A helper that's fit for him. And it's interesting that most of the time when this word is used, the idea of help and helper, is talking about divine assistance. So I think this tells us that God knows man needs divine assistance. Now there's probably a lot of truth to that. Men need divine assistance. Men need a helper. This is help from God. God made man a counterpart. A counterpart. God didn't make two men to be together, two women to be together. He made a man and a woman because they complement one another. They complete each other. In other words, the man isn't really complete without the woman, nor vice versa. They complement one another. One reference, I'm not exactly sure which one I read now, says it's the idea of they make each other complete. And again, that goes back to the idea of oneness. It's back to the idea of oneness. I think this is one of the reasons why the New Testament says that an elder should be a married man. Because the wife, the woman, completes the man. And the man by himself can't fulfill all of his obligations as an elder to the degree he needs to without that woman, without the wife. So the woman is a helper. Suitable for what he needs. And what a tremendously powerful, rich, deep verse that one verse is, Genesis 2:18. And we think about our world, and again how wives are treated in so many societies. If those societies would just understand this one verse, is how men and women complete each other. They complement one another. They fulfill each other. And certainly should be blessed because of it. Adam was blessed by God when Eve was formed. When Eve was created. Adam was blessed because of it. Adam was complete. Remember what preceded this, don't you? Animals coming by and different ones being shown, said, well, that's not, this one's not good, that one's not good, on and on. But it was Eve that completed Adam.
made him what he needed to be. I know you've heard the expression, behind every good man there's a good woman, or behind every successful man there's a good woman. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I know I would be lost and incomplete without Denise in so many ways. I could start listing those ways now. We would be here well past midnight. Way past, probably next midnight, actually. That's how long it would go. See, God knew what he was doing. Again, he didn't make man and man or woman and woman. It was man and woman. And there's a reason he made men and women differently. And again, they complement, they help each other. Then the last one I want to look at is found in Proverbs 31. This is one you've probably studied before, I'm sure. Proverbs 31, but it also teaches a great lesson about woman. Proverbs 31. And notice verse 10. And again, it'll depend on which version you're looking at, but quite often in the Old Testament, you know, the woman and wife term are interchangeable. In Proverbs 31, verse 10, it says, "Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies." Some translations have, "For who can find a virtuous woman?" Because a virtuous woman is, as it says, her worth is far above rubies. Her worth is unimaginable. It is so great. The virtuous woman, or the excellent woman. Here the word describes a woman who has a strong moral character. When you look at the rest of that chapter, you see all the different things that she was involved in, the things she did, and so forth. And part of the things she did was what? Helped her husband, right? Helped her husband. So here is a woman who is strong. She's virtuous. She has a high moral character. And the Bible talks about how tremendously valuable she is. This isn't the only place in Proverbs that talks about that. Going back to Proverbs 12, notice verse 4. Proverbs 12, verse 4. Here's the same phrase, essentially. Proverbs 12, verse 4. "An excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who causes shame is like rottenness in his bones." See, the virtuous, excellent wife or woman is the crown of her husband. Again, showing her great worth. 19:14, Proverbs 19, verse 14. Proverbs 19, verse 14. "Houses and riches are an inheritance from fathers, but a prudent wife, an excellent wife, a virtuous wife, is from the Lord." There's the source, in other words, comes from God. So this virtuous woman, when you look at what she does and her value, she influences people for good. She sets an example in that she's industrious. She's diligent. She takes care of her house. She helps others. She's not idle. She goes about doing good. And just look at how the Bible pictures women. I mean, the Bible, just look at what little we have studied tonight and how great a picture the Bible paints of women. Beginning with Eve and coming all the way down to today. Women are pictured as being extremely valuable. Eve was created out of the side of Adam. Eve was given a spirit, a soul. Women have great worth. I know we didn't talk much about what the New Testament says, but the New Testament paints a very similar picture. And I just want to read one verse. Galatians chapter 3. And this will end our lesson tonight. Galatians chapter 3. Beginning in verse 26.
says, for you are all sons of God through faith in Christ Jesus. And some translations have children of God there. For as many of you as were baptized into Christ have put on Christ. And notice the context is salvation and where it's found and who it's available to. There's neither Jew nor Greek. See, there's no distinction between those. There's neither slave nor free. There's no distinction there. There's neither male nor female. No distinction there. For you're all one in Christ Jesus, meaning that all, regardless of your station in life, regardless of your ethnic background, regardless of your race, regardless of your gender, all have salvation available. Christ died for all. Male and female, slave and free, all. The Bible is so clear and plain on this point. The Bible never looks down upon women. The Bible always holds women in high regard, in high esteem. Repeatedly, the Bible talks about how valuable women are to their husbands, to the family, to society, to the culture, to religion. And that our world does pretty much just the opposite. And how sad that is. And why anyone would want to be a part of a religion that treats women so badly, as nothing more than property, as basically not being worth anything, I have no idea. Because God sees women and views women in such a high regard. Salvation is available to all, young and old, male, female. Regardless of our background, it's available to all. Christ died for all and made salvation available to all. So tonight, as we think about the words of our invitation song, let's think about, what is my relationship with God? Is it what I want it to be? And if it's not, now's the time to do something about it. And if you have that desire, come as we stand and sing this song.